council members to the table?
Even so, he were going to.
Yeah.
He would have did the right thing.
He would have kept it.
Okay, we're calling this Finance Committee meeting for March 27th, 2012 to order. Currently present are council persons Kilpatrick, Diller, Sheldon, Cartier, Weiner.
Right here.
Retta.
Over here.
I'm George Smiley, co-chair of finance. Tara Finnegan will be taking the minutes.
Okay.
What's your pleasure on the revised minutes as distributed?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. First on the agenda is Resolution 12-042, approving the refund of taxes paid in error. Councilman Cartier.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 12-042 proposes to refund taxes paid in error. It's an approval resolution. And as council members are aware, you know, we entertain these from time to time in the course of business. Taxes do get paid in error. And I'd just like to throw out a lifeline to our Chief Financial Officer, Ed Milwicki, to give us explanation and detail on this. Thank
sure.
you.
Ed Milwicki, from the Finance Office. There's four of these accounts on here. Three of the four are duplicate payments. In most cases, what we see is the local company will pay them, and then the main office, wherever they're located, will pay them also. And one of them is the property in the city that they granted the Wilmington Tax Incentive Program. So the part of the year they're getting their taxes back because they were granted that Wilmington Tax Incentive Program. Basically, that's the four. Three are duplicates, and one is the Wilmington Tax Incentive Program.
Thank you.
Any questions from any members of council? Questions from the public? Thank you very much. Moving right along. Resolution 12-043, authorizing the execution of certain contracts. Councilman Cartier.
Yes. Resolution 12-043, authorizing a contract with Delmarva Power to string new power lines. Who would like to handle this? Yes. Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, I'm Dave Clark. I'm Chief of Project Management with Special Services. I appeared before you last month to get the poles moved. Now I'm appearing before you so that I can hire Delmarva Power to move their electric lines and transformers from the old pole line to the new pole line so that now I can build a sanitary sewer where the old pole line used to be. If you approve this, can I ask, please, we process as fast as possible. I've got a bulldozer sitting out there with an engine running, and I'd sure like to put them to work.
Mr. Chairman, if
George.
I could. This sanitary sewer trunk line in Brandywood goes along, what's the creek there it's adjacent to? I do know that it's a very constrained site, and I do understand the nature of the request to move the poles and the subsequent power lines and cable lines. So I can appreciate the difficulty of this, and I'm sure council members will expedite this request and get this approved this evening.
We'll vote it on the floor this evening. Council President will sign it tonight, and then we'll go over. I'm sorry, Councilman Martin.
Thank you. On behalf of my constituents in Brandywood, I'd like to thank in advance council members for approving this. Valley Avenue runs roughly parallel to Falk Road on the western side. On the other side from Falk and Neiman Shopping Center, it's all one project, but this is in their backyards. It's been very disruptive, and the county sewer has been doing its best to expedite the project that's going on behind their houses in Brandywood on Valley Avenue.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah, Mr. Milwicki.
Just want to add Milwicki from the Finance Office. If you remember when we made this presentation, it was cheaper for the county to contract with Delmarva Power directly than for the contractor doing the sewer. So this is a good deal for everybody. Us going directly to Delmarva Power.
Good point.
It's a tributary of the Neiman's Creek.
Tributary. Okay, thank you.
This is a good deal. A great deal is free.
That's right.
We will take a good deal in lieu of a great deal.
Thank you.
Any questions from any members of council? Questions from the public? None. Thank you very much. Trying to plug that bulldozer in. It's going to get cold. We'll make sure it'll start in the morning. Okay. Next, we have Ordinance 12-026, amend the annual operating budget, revise special services to provide additional funding for fuel purchases for FY 2012. I'm going to call on Councilman Sheldon.
Yeah, Councilman Powers, I was supposed to do this, but I'll go ahead and do it since we had a tough time last time.
Nice guy.
But this, but actually this is a zero budget item. What we're doing is we're taking out of the materials and supplies. We're adding that. That's the fuel that we need to keep running on special services, the ambulances, the paramedics, and so forth. But we're decreasing the equipment on the special services side. And there's been a decrease in wages and salaries. I can throw out a lifeline if you wish. But basically, that's it. So it's a net zero. Somebody says, what are we doing forward? I don't know.
For what
unless we go to Iran and take over them or whatever. Well, that was a story last time, and I've been very nice, and I'm not going to start this year neither.
For what it's worth, I heard on the radio this morning over the last couple of weeks that gas is going down on the West Coast almost a penny.
So,
I'm going
to
write that. Okay. I just got a note that says Bill Bell is running a little late. I'm going to assume he's driving a little late. So he will be here soon.
Mr. Chair, I think head of special services wants to speak on it.
Wait, Mayor,
I wanted to get it.
Acting General Manager of Special Services. Voila. Okay. We thought there might be some interest in this, so we put together a little PowerPoint.
And you got that idea from that little exchange?
Yes, I thought that was good enough.
It made you feel good. Go ahead.
I think I had the votes here.
You don't want to say it. Okay.
I'll yield to the sponsor. You're rolling the dice. I think
just
you had
part
it,
of zero.
Just want to let you know, my grandfather told me you cannot out-listen yourself out of a job. So just let you know.
Was this part of the zero?
We'll this
just
included
in the price.
If we see the county car going to the mall, you got a problem.
Make this as painless as possible. Quick overview, why fuel costs are rising if you haven't figured it out, or you've been in the cave, we're going to tell you why it's going up. How we buy fuel, what we can't control, what we can control. Talk a little bit about our administrative fleet size, driving behavior, and assignment of vehicles. Why costs are rising. The petroleum market is volatile, to say the least. Geopolitical tensions in the Middle East, pick the country, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia. Speculation of supply and demand and balance. Growing interest in petroleum as an asset class. Small part of this, there hasn't been a refinery built in this country for over 30 years. And they're closing a couple, if you haven't heard, rather locally. And not listed on there is China, which 20 years ago was not the player that it was 10 years ago, which was not the player that it is now. All of this is just causing tremendous demand for oil. How we buy fuels? Well, because consumers and suppliers are always panicking these days on any piece of bad news. Fixed price contracts are just not available. We've got Andrea Smith here from purchasing to talk if anybody has any detailed questions they'd like answered. The type of contracts that we use enable us to change suppliers to our advantage. We currently purchase number two fuel, which is used for generators and heating, on what is called a Philadelphia OPIS, it's the oil price information service. And it's marked up 11.75 cents per gallon. We currently purchase gasoline through the state of Delaware's contract, which essentially it's with 10% ethanol. It's about 3.5 cents above that rack price for tanks, 5,000 gallons and up, and three tanks we have over it. At the counter building are 12,000 gallon tanks. Here's what it boils down to, the volatility of the market. And this we can't control. When we did our budget for FY12, we budgeted $2.75 for diesel and $2.57 for gasoline. The average we have paid so far for diesel is $3.22. And the most current batch we bought was $3.45. Again, gasoline, $2.57, $2.95, and paid $3.99. Now the advantage of that is that we're not paying the federal and state motor tax charges that everybody pays if they go. And the fact is we're in a service business. Police, paramedics, special services, we respond when people call. This is something that we got from finance, and it really tells the picture. Monthly, you can see the fluctuation in fuels. Some of these override themselves when we trying to make adjustments to it. But if you look back to January of 2009, we were paying $1.16 for unleaded fuel. You go to February 10, we're paying somewhere in the area of $2.03. February of 2011, we're paying $2.54. Last month, we're paying $2.99. Some of the things we're doing, we're reducing administrative fleet, taking a close look at miles traveled. Department of Community Services, we were able to call out 2 of 8 vehicles that they use for admin, so essentially their pool vehicles. Department of Land Use, we were able to pull out 4 of the 18 they had. And within our own department, we've managed to remove 5 of 22. And those went back into the big pool, and from the big pool, we took the worst 11 to put out for auction. Turn this next part over to Paul Fries. And he's going to talk about an innovative program that we've instituted in special services with a couple of vehicles, and we hope to expand it to the rest of the fleet. Paul?
Recently, we embarked on an effort to partner with the state. They have what's called the GPS or telematics units through Network Fleet, which gives them a whole plethora of reporting possibilities for the vehicles. It's really a diagnostic unit within the car that tells us a whole host of things, from idle time to speed to abusers of the cars, proper utilization, identifying excess engine idle times, and things of that nature. They've experienced return on investment in 18 months, projected out to be 3 years. Their initial investment, like I said, they got back within a period of 18 months, just idle time, speed, and proper use of the cars alone. Reducing the speed from 75 to 65 on highway use can save about 10%, or increase mileage MPG by about 10%. Reducing time by every hour you're using about 0.7 gallons per gas per hour. So if we can just reduce it by 5%, we can save a significant amount of money. The two units we have now equipped with these pilots, we have opportunities. We were able to do sort of a identify where the cars are at any moment in time. What we found with our pilot program for the pool car was that although we had 21 users for 16 vehicles, we were able to give 5 back total, as Wayne mentioned. You'd think that the balance of mods would transfer to the rest of the car. That wasn't the case at all. In fact, usage among those cars was down by 27%. One, because behavior was immediately changed just in human nature, knowing those units are in the cars, the extra trips were stopped, maybe some of the efforts to carpool became a little bit more pronounced, going to the same meetings. So significant change in behavior immediately. So the hope is to have a soft rollout. We are going to purchase about 100 of these units before March, or before May. We have a purchase order ready to roll for those. We're going to piggyback off the state's contract, and we should see a significant savings within the first 12 months of utilization. And finally, the assignment by vehicle type. Ongoing review of all vehicle assignments for appropriateness and best economy of longest life. We're looking at what the next generation of vehicles should be. Should they be the Ford Focuses, the Ford Volt, or the Chevy Volts, the Ford Interceptor for the police cars, a whole bunch of opportunities. It depends on the use of the cars. Right now, the hybrids, the jury's still out on those. They're very expensive to maintain, although economical early on from a fuel consumption standpoint. The batteries are the biggest setback for those vehicles. The integrity of the casing of the battery is so subject to any kind of minor impact. They're $8,000 a piece to replace. So industry right now is still out. The case that the battery comes in is about $1,200. So you're looking at $9,200 to replace a battery with an unknown level of impact still to be determined. The balance utilization among classes of cars and service types. If we find that the cars are being underutilized, we'll begin to exchange based on service needs and service types cars among the same level of users. And then again, next generation of vehicles. Right now, there's a whole host of government fleets out there that are doing certain tests with certain vehicles, the Focuses, the Caprices, the Volts, and the Fusions, the Malibus, and the Chevy Cruzes. Cruzes are out because the steering wheel falls off the steering column, so those are being recalled. The Chevy Volts have been discontinued for the 2012 year model because the power grid gets too hot with the batteries. The battery explodes and catches fire. So technology is too new, not a long track record with those vehicles. So we're better off going with a small, economical type car. We can either pay $22,000 to replace the Tauruses or $14,000 off the state's contract for a Ford Focus.
Questions?
Councilman Kilpatrick.
Oh, I just want to get on the record that Council President Kovac has joined us.
Did you ever, and I'm sure you did, look into employees just using their own vehicle and paying them mileage?
There's a part of county code now that allows for, I believe it's 45 cents a mile,
40
cents a mile.
But yes, goes up.
There's a reluctance. There's reluctance for county employees to use their own vehicles.
By the employees or by the administration?
Easy to encourage hard to get them to do that.
Okay, well,
I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, I know. In some places you have no choice.
Just to follow up on one of the points they made, the most of our vehicles are public safety vehicles, police, paramedics.
And I understand that.
But there may be some out there that is possible. I think majority of these are public safety vehicles.
Public safety
vehicles.
Because it's a capital investment to buy cars. So, taking that out of the equation has got to help something.
Right.
Depending on what they would charge us for advertising to put our logo on their side.
Councilman Redham.
Thank you. And a couple things, Paul. One, you were talking about the so-called telematic or whatever it is, the GPS type thing. The state has had that for about 3 years now. They've been saving about 10% a year on their cost. The other is... And I know it's not easy for me to say, but it's the truth. The best hybrid out there is the Prius. The longevity of the batteries are 8 years, but after the fifth year, the battery starts going down and your fuel starts going up. That's the way they work on those. But Americans haven't gotten it right yet. I don't know why. They could have had it right. The Chevy Volt is one of the highest priced out there. They've talked about the Fisker, but the Chevy Volt on sale is $44,000, and they don't work. They just fall apart, like you said. The one thing that they do have, I believe it's Chevy, they have a smaller battery, that is used when the car stops, the car runs on battery to start up. So in other words, the engine shuts down, and when you start, you hit the pedal, it runs on the battery and then kicks in again into the gas. So that saves a little gas. But I mean, there's a couple things out there you can look at on that. I don't know if you know about that one or not.
What the state is driving, their current contracts, they're with the Ford Focuses. They have 20 in last year's budget. They're purchasing another 50 this year. They also have the Ford Fusion for admin type vehicles, and they have the Malibu flex fuel vehicles. That's what their primary cars are. From a police cruiser, they have a few Chargers. Obviously, you see those out there. They have the Caprices, and for their SUV police vehicles, they have Tahoes, 4x4s and 2x4s. And most fleets are moving to the Interceptor type car. They're a step down from V6s from V8s, all-wheel drive, and they're built in America.
Are you talking about the state? Yeah, they're assembled in America.
Assembled in America.
I mean, my car is assembled in Canada, and it's an American car. The engine comes from Opel. Have you looked at, like, non-essential vehicles? I mean, non-essential people that, you know, that would just have to go around the different job areas in a smaller SUV? Instead of having, like, a Durango or a Tahoe where you can use, like, an Equinox or a Terrain or something like that? Or
Escape.
The only, we do have 8 Escapes. But they're in the same situation, too, Councilwoman, where their batteries are due to expire. They have 8-year warranty. They're due to expire in a few years.
Because they're all high-use hybrids?
They're also about $7,000 to replace. So our hope is to get full utilization, lifetime service out of those, and then get rid of them before the warranty expires.
Good.
To answer your question, most non-hard, heavy-duty, in fact, Lane Use has offered to give back their trucks to just take the Tauruses and go to a smaller car too. So yeah, most of the heavy duty cars are either in special services or public safety has a lot of the SUV type vehicles too.
And one more thing, I know we do fleet driving. What about assigned driving? Assigned vehicle to assign to one person. And I know you don't have to go into a lot of cars, but I mean just certain people to drive that one car.
We actually moved away from that and did more of the pool car concept. That's how we were able to give back 11 vehicles because utilization is down, and versus trying to identify the pockets of users who could schedule their work versus being reactive to work. You have the emergencies or the code enforcement type folks, the public safety folks, and our sewer guys. So those who could plan their work versus react to work, that's how we found the pocket of 21 cars, or 16 cars, and able to get rid of 5 and not have any impact to the utilization at all. It was so balanced, we were able to get rid of the cars within 6 months of our pilot.
Was the repair up on them?
Well, they were various ages, various mile ranges, so it just
so
depended on the user.
Yeah.
It was the worst of the worst. We got rid of them.
Thank you.
Put on record, Councilman Bell has joined us.
Thanks, sir.
Any further questions from any members? Councilman Cardia.
I think a lot of this really comes down to how people use these vehicles. And, you know, restricting idling or not idling has two benefits. Not only you don't use fuel, you don't create, you know, air pollution problems where the vehicle is. Secondly, which is all good. Secondly, you know, getting people to obey the speed limit, not go, you know, accelerate quickly off a light. I mean, I think if you know, the person is really dialed in, they're using the car, the vehicle, in a manner which it'll maximize the fuel economy. You know, it's really where it's at. I don't see any major, you know, technological changes are going to bring any magic to this situation anytime soon.
Spec versus actual MPGs.
You know.
It comes down to the user, you're right.
And I think trying to drive that message home to the employees is really where you're going to have your biggest, you know, fuel economy savings.
State realized a 62% reduction in speed violations within the first 6 months. And that's with thresholds built in, so you can have thresholds built in over the posted speed limit. And any of those violations are the ones that are reported. So they've decreased those violations by 62%.
Wayne Merritt, Special Services. Just one last thought. If gas goes over $4 a gallon, we'll be back.
Are you trying to get a bicycle grant or what?
The police already have one. So I just wanted to be right up front.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's those timely that we're talking about fuel prices and everything because as part of our budget hearing yesterday, we went over to the Sheriff's Department, and the Sheriff himself, along with one of the deputies that was here, spoke the fact that not only is their vehicles aging, but that they often are using sort of hand-me-downs, Crown Victorias in some cases and whatnot. So I think it's very timely to say that there's a department, a smaller department of about 9 vehicles, that if we could invest some money into improving the fleet, maybe we could save some fuel. They themselves said that they really don't need like a full-blown police package.
and everything, but they need something that's, you know, roomy enough to get around and do their job efficiently. But, you know, I was going to wait and actually broach the question to the administration to take a look at this as we replace our fleet, because I know a lot of times we buy fleet replacement in bulk. And, you know, so that's one area. I think, you know, the sheriff had suggested it. I think it's a good suggestion, and I think it'd be a timely suggestion to help with this cause.
Chair, let's recognize Councilman Powers to join us. Is there any further questions on ordinance number 12-026? Council, and thank you to the public. Thank you very much.
You do the one in June. You already said they're coming back in June.
Next, with council's indulgence, we're going to do ordinance 12-027 and 12-028. They're intertwined. We read them into the record. 12-027, amend the FY 2012 operating budget, reduce the Department of Community Services FY 2012 operating budget by $10,000. And the Office of Economic Development FY 2012 operating budget by $40,000 to provide funding for the Community Economic Development Planning and Projects Program. It's under my sponsorship, and what that does, as you just heard, it transfers the funds in order to create the program. 12-028 amends the grants budget. It actually appropriates the $50,000 to the Community Economic Development Planning and Projects Program, and that's under my sponsorship. So one removes the funds from one budget and the other allocates it to the grants. And I believe we're going to have a brief presentation from Mr. Kaulbacher.
Thank you, Councilman Carl Kaulbacher.
Excuse me, let me go on the record. Councilman Street is here with us. Thank you, sir.
Next
to
you're
the third one in line.
Provide to you some update on our proposed community economic development grant program.
Thank you.
As you recall, this program is part of County Executive Clark's Sowing Seed, Growing Jobs initiative. And essentially what this program is about is providing opportunities for small business expansion within our local communities. This program is structured to encourage partnerships amongst businesses, nonprofits, community groups to create a sustainable economic development program for that area with measurable outcomes. So we have developed a grant announcement as well as a document that we would use to evaluate the proposals. So, in the document, it clearly stated that we want to see some measurable outcomes and have some pretty tangible information with regard to the need for the type of program that's being suggested. We want to, as one of the objectives, although it's not necessarily the requirement, we want to seek out programs that will create jobs for low-income persons, to provide opportunities for access to credit, as well as to support economically disadvantaged persons. Those proposals that provide for that opportunity certainly will receive notice. And consistent with our comprehensive land use plan that we've had for many years, we want to support projects that encourage small business development along transit corridors, smart growth, and redevelopment of properties that are either abandoned or vacant, or what we refer to as gray fields or brownfields. As you know, this is a fund that is a limited amount. We've been able to cobble together $50,000. This is a joint venture between the Office of Economic Development and the Department of Community Services. When we first came to you with this idea, you suggested to us to try to provide maximum coverage of the funding, and so we have limited the maximum grant award to $15,000. So you can see that if we're able to get this money out on the street, we would have three or more projects available. We've also indicated in our application that we will provide partial grant awards so that we can get more projects approved. We've also indicated that those who have received grants from the county the last year would not be eligible, so they're provided opportunities for new applications. We want to maximize the use of these funds, so there's a 50% project match requirement. Those matches can be in the kind of in-kind support, staff time, land services, and other contributions, and that's again part of the application. So we're trying to work with local community groups that may not have the cash on hand to move forward their project. Our eligible applicants are nonprofit organizations. For-profit organizations can partner with nonprofit organizations, so we try to make it as available to as many groups as possible. 501c6 business entities, which are trade organizations, chambers of commerce, are also able to apply for grant funding. And again, at the request, I think, of council, we focused on towns, villages, and incorporated areas with populations less than 10,000 persons. You told us that you felt that the larger towns had the institutional capacity to proceed forward with their own economic development initiatives, and so we focused this funding on those smaller populations. Our point system is based upon applicants' need to complete the projects, and so again, the applicants are includes that type of information. One of the things you told us was not to aggregate a grant award in one particular councilmatic district, but rather to share the wealth, if you will. And so as part of the application process, it's limited, a grant award is limited to one council district, one per council district. So if you have three of 15,000, three council districts that would receive the award. Although if you have projects of a much smaller scale, then an individual council district could receive multiple $2,000 grant awards depending upon the viability of that project. Examples that we've suggested to folks to consider are building capacity for development and expansion of a business association, developing incubator space, supporting small business facade improvement programs, feasibility studies of areas that are underutilized or abandoned, looking at a market analysis of an area to determine what is the business that could best fit in that area. Developing of marketing programs, development of festivals, attractions, special events that will attract consumers to the small business area, and supporting employment training programs. These are just some ideas that we've thrown out, and what we will be doing once this gets approved, hopefully it will get approved, is we will be reaching out to nonprofit organizations. We will be contacting local governments. We will be reaching out to organizations that you have given notice to provide them this information. We will have workshops to get the word out and seek proposals. This gives you a sense of the grant evaluation process. As I mentioned, this program is ready to roll, if you will. We have the grant is ready to go and the criteria for evaluation. We want to make sure that our proposals are have a good, strong foundation, soundness of approach. The objectives and strategies are clearly explained. Partnerships and leveraging of resources. Project benefits are clearly defined. And that the project can sustain itself over time. It's not a one-time shot. We want to have the applicants provide us qualitative and quantitative data for the need, really reflect why do we need to have, why they need to have the funding. They should describe their strategic plan, the people that will benefit, as well as the need for the funding. We identified the objectives earlier to you. We also want to make sure that these organizations that will be applying have the capacity to do the work, that they're not just a fly-by-night organization that's going to take the money and not produce an outcome. So we want to see that they have a strong track record of organization, stability, and strong fiscal management. The submittal instructions, they're allowed to provide, applicants are allowed to provide greater detail, budgets, maps, reports, pictures, plans. We would plan to have these proposals in by May 31st, which means that we would probably get this on the street in April and be reaching out to community groups during the months of April and May. The projects we want to have completed within 2 years. We also want to have semi-annual reporting to Newcastle County, including County Council, so at your discretion, if you'd like to have these award winners come in and explain to you their project and their progress and their outcomes, we welcome that opportunity to have them come. I think that may be it.
First, I want to recognize that, Councilman Hollins joined us during the presentation. Councilman Wire, just a moment. I personally am not looking to micromanage this program, but I would ask as a courtesy that whenever a grant is awarded, if all of council could be transmitted a brief synopsis of the project, its location, what, you know, what funds, if we could kind of be updated in the progress of it.
Absolutely. So,
Councilman Wire.
Thanks. That was one of my requests. Observation and a second request. Observation, thank you for listening to council and integrating our suggestions. And my second request would be, can you send us that PowerPoint so that we can share it with prospective applicants?
Councilman, it's already uploaded and you have it right here. So I know that we, whenever we come in, we work with Jim Boyle, so he has these.
Okay, can Jim send this out to us by email?
I have it.
Okay, great, thanks.
And we've updated it, by the way.
Great, thanks. If I could get a link to that, I'll send it out.
Talk to my boss.
Okay.
President Govan.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Carl, if I think it would probably be useful since there's only one grant per district, if an application comes in, that the council person or staff member be notified of the application in that district so that they're aware of what's going on and, you know, can communicate, that'll probably be helpful. So because of that limitation, you could be talking to a nonprofit in your, or, you know, in your, and somebody else is submitting an application. So the communication would be very welcome on, I think, on this issue.
Absolutely, that's fine.
I do.
Okay. That's all his hand.
Oh,
I was pointing.
The last time you get my seat.
When you talked about towns, villages, and communities, you put in the word incorporated. Does that mean that all of them have to be incorporated in
no.
order to apply?
No, no, that does not mean that at all. If Hockessin, Marshallton, Bear, some sense of geography, but again, we try to give it as much flexibility as possible. Nonprofits, 501c6s, some semblance of structure in a geographic area will be suffice.
Okay.
We're not going to be very rigid on that.
Thank you.
And this is something that we're floating out there, so I would hope that, you know, if in this process you find that there's something that's not working, something that's hindering it, that you would come back to us and give us an opportunity to adjust the program.
Absolutely, Councilman. We're very flexible. We want to be successful. Absolutely.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I first want to, I think it's a tremendous program. I want to thank Carl personally. We already have a meeting set up with one of our local businesses that's looking to expand in the future down in the North St. George's area. We're going to be going down and meeting with them on Thursday evening. And, you know, so I think the initiative of reaching out, speaking with folks and talking about economic development, creating jobs, keeping people working. So I applaud you and the administration on that. But on the other hand, there's something that I think needs to be brought out and brought forward when we talk about economic development and jobs. Few of us have been made aware just recently, and I'm not sure whether our economic development office has been made aware, but there is a move afoot, an active move afoot, to take the Port of Wilmington and either through a long-term lease or sale to privatize the Port of Wilmington. We have received several calls from constituents, from folks in labor, and various businesses that work at the port that have a serious concern over that. And I think that when you look, that it affects all of us. But when you look at Jay Street, Penrose Hollins, myself, George, Cartier to the north, I mean, we have a vested interest in that port when it comes to economic development, when it comes to jobs, when it comes to keeping people working. And so I'm not sure whether we're aware internally. If we are, I'll make further comment later, but this is something that is serious. I think we need to look at it as being serious. I think we need to take some sort of action to find out exactly who's looking at it, what's being looked at, and why it's happening without our knowledge, and want to talk about jobs, want to talk about keeping people working and creating economic development. There's folks that have invested in business to work at the port that will be out of a job if this happens. And so I don't know whether we're aware of it as the county, but if we are, I'm certainly going to be disturbed that none of us have been made aware of it from a district level.
Well, I'm sure we can find a meeting to discuss it and bring in Mr. Levin or ask them, invite them.
Well, we have our economic chair here.
But it's a state facility. And it's actually, what I've heard is they're looking at expanding public-private, because it has been public-private for years. It's a public port in that the state now owns it. But many of the businesses and operations in there are private. Dole, Chiquita, Citrus, Suco, and a bunch of those. I had heard they were looking to expand that. As far as turning it over, that I had not heard. As a matter of fact, it was being discussed in the state legislature when I was down there last week.
Well, in all due respect, what I'm hearing is that it would become privatization as far as the overall management and operation of the port. And I think we should be concerned. We should know more about what's going on with it and what impact it's going to have on folks that already work at the port. And I, the only question I'd like to at least ask with the courtesy of the chair would just be, is are we as Newcastle County aware of this, and can you shed any light on it? Because when we talk about economic development, this is serious business to the port.
Thank you, Councilman, for the question. We are aware of the request for proposals. My understanding was that the request was focused on expansion of dock facilities along the Delaware River where the dredge spoils are piling up to expand wharfing capability in that area. However, I've also heard the same concerns that you have raised, both from union representation as well as merit representation, that the port works very well and that something that would be tantamount to take over of the port by a private entity could cause some adverse reaction. I would suggest that what Councilman Smiley has indicated might be the better course, which is to ask the Delaware State Port Corporation, in this case it's the state, Delaware Economic Development Office, to come before you and share more information about this. Because I think it is a legitimate issue that needs to be
And I just share Councilman Bell. We take nothing lightly. Over 27 years at the Port of Wilmington. For 27 years, I tracked down every rumor and everything that came through. And this has popped up periodically, especially when the city had it. As a matter of fact, I was one of the ones that was heavily involved in trying to take the port from the city and get it to the state, because if the city had kept it, it would have either gone belly up or gone private. So, I have a personal interest in it.
I understand, respect it, and I appreciate your involvement.
I appreciate you bringing up the topic.
But let me mention that fact, and you can confirm or not confirm, but I think we just heard that fact is there are proposals, requests for proposals out there for a private entity to come in and take over.
My understanding is that at a minimum, the proposal was to expand a dock space along the Delaware River. I'm not entirely clear as to whether or not their proposal encompasses the entire port. That's where we need to have clarification.
For instance, Volkswagen helped fund a designated dock that was theirs. No one else could use it unless they authorized it when that was built. But no, I agree. We need to look at it. Councilman Street.
Well, I think it's bigger than just a small discussion here. And the fact of the matter is, I asked council, I submitted a resolution in support of the dredging project, and the purpose and intention of that was to ask this council, which we did as a council, to support dredging and thereby create additional opportunities for jobs as part and parcel to that. That resolution, it was a matter of public record. It was communicated in the public press. And my better judgment tells me that it was the court was made aware of it prior to the court making this decision to authorize the dredging. Now, if the state and the state administration is so much as contemplating privatizing the port, they may get away with it. They may be able to do it. I'm not a fortune teller. I don't know what's going to happen, but I guarantee you one thing, it's not going to happen without a darn good fight, because the city's infrastructure is dependent on that. Residents who live in the city now are dependent on that. And I look upon a serious effort to privatize the port, I look at it the exact same way I'm looking at all this union busting that's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio and other things. And if folks think that that's serious, then any attempt to privatize the port is just as serious in my eyes as that is. So I don't think we need to have this little nicey-nicey bring out the violence meeting. I want to know what the hell their intention is. And I think we need to ask them. And then so I don't know whether it's a big fight, a little fight, and we need to go on and start having this fight now, because nobody's going to play with this.
And I didn't hear anybody in this room say that they were. Councilman Shelby.
Hey, I just want to say, to back up with Mr. Street and everybody, I mean, we have, I don't want to stereotype people, but I'm going to tell you, the Democratic Party didn't take it easy when we all got together and went against a lot of, I guess you would say, environmentalists, because we looked at jobs. And most of us are Democrats on here, got a lot of phone calls. But daggone it, we stood up, grabbed ground, because we needed jobs. We know how bad Wilmington is. And I'm going to tell you, we passed that. And I forget what the vote was, but I think it was almost unanimous. If it wasn't 13 to nothing, it was pretty close. I don't remember. But, we did what we thought was the right thing to do for jobs. And then for somebody to come over and take kind of advantage of us beforehand is a kick in the butt, I guess.
Think the committee, you think it's appropriate? Let's move forward.
I share the concerns of Councilman Burrow spoke. It just seems to me far too often that these types of initiatives take place and council is left in the dark until the 11th hour, or we read something in the paper, we even have the courtesy to get our opinion, or we're asked to do certain incentives in terms of tax breaks. We don't say anything. We've had a meeting before to express our concern with Alan Levine and all these state people here, and the same thing has happened. The fact of the matter is, the port is in my district. It impacts not just my district, but all over this area. Pretty much impacts the whole eastern seaboard with the types of imports we get there. And for the state or whoever owns it to take that position, to ignore us altogether, and we're finding out through people, through phone calls from constituents, when constituents have a concern and issue, they're not calling Alan Levine, they're not calling the state, wherever this entity is that runs the port, they are calling us. I think at a bare minimum, the state should have the courtesy to let us know exactly what's being planned, and it's only appropriate to have someone who's in charge, who have the answers, and apparently Carl doesn't, to be at our next meeting. If it can't be in finance, whatever meeting, anyone, if you don't want to entertain it, Mr.
No, Chairman, I have no problem. I just don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Well, no, I think we should move right ahead, fast as we can, to contact whoever has the answers to be at our next meeting and present us with what's going on. They don't seem to trust us with these kind of initiatives. You can't tell county council because there are certain things that are going on and we may compromise that. But they can come to county council when it's time to give the incentives to the tax breaks and those kind of things at the 11th hour, and I find it to be offensive.
Okay, two things. One, maybe we can get economic development to schedule a meeting. And two, I find frustrating, Councilman Hollins, is we were at the first of the monthly meeting that we didn't have a second of, and exactly what you said was put on the table to the governor and his staff right there. So, yeah, that's a change. Councilman Powers.
Just so y'all know, it does extend for the whole state, and George was probably working on the money. I worked hard to get the state to buy the port through the 21st Century Fund, and I was representing at the time the Farm Bureau and the UAW. But that was one thing I spent a lot of time on getting it done. So that was part of it. It was purchased out of the 21st Century Fund. It isn't just jobs in your area, it's being exported, you know, products, poultry or whatever from there. There's a lot of, at different times, there have been a lot of tractors that are for serviced in Hoover's and Middletown that get shipped over. If there's any repairs, they come down to Middletown. So.
Okay, we're going with Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Street, and Councilman Bell, and then Councilman Cartier, and then I hope we can reconvene this in an economic development meeting and move forward with finance.
Just briefly, Councilman Rutta and I did meet with Alan Levin a while back and stated, just as you did, that we have this committee, we would appreciate at least being briefed as things were coming down that were going to impact the county, and part of it was the tax issue, you know, that so many times we just get broadsided that all we know nothing, and then all of a sudden it's in front of us and we're expected just to rubber stamp something that the state has offered from us. We have an economic development meeting that's scheduled for next week. We have a speaker, but if we, you know, if we need the flexibility, we can certainly postpone him and bring Mr. Levin in.
I think council, if it's at all possible to switch that up, I think this is a burning enough issue that would be appreciated.
I understand that.
He's not on a heart transplant list.
We can
wait
postpone
another 2 weeks.
Him twice. He's from the same office.
Why don't we see if we can do two the same day?
Well, I have a feeling this would take precedent over John.
The presentation from the gentleman in the state would probably take him more than an hour for a project. That's a factor.
Well, I think this just gives you the flexibility. You know you have finance committee, which would be the following week. You know you have economic development, that would be next week. So it gives you two dates.
Well, it's
for whoever's going to
We'll talk about it. We'll get back to the council. We'll send word around to the council.
Right. Great.
We could put one in the other room, one over here, and whoever wants to watch that, watch that. Whoever wants to talk about the port and stay here. We'll do two meetings at once, Helen. Okay. Councilman Street.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, thank you for your patience, but this is just very, very troubling to me. And I'm wondering, you know, everybody's running for re-election and folks are running around talking about transparency. Why are these conversations or conversations like this coming to us and apparently things being done under the cover of darkness? There's something wrong and mysterious here. And quite frankly, I think that we need to get it from the horse's mouth. And ultimately, we need to ask the governor straight up, what is your intention? And I think we need to communicate that in writing. And this is of such great concern to me, and I have said before we ever started having this conversation, I have been saying for at least the last year that the city, as a city, is in trouble, its infrastructure is in trouble, and the reason I brought forward the resolution supporting dredging because my view has been that the city's future and its destiny is basically lays in the port, because I think as the port goes, the city's going to go. If the port does well, I think the city will do well. If the port is in somebody else's control and does not do well, the city's going to go to hell in a handbasket. So I really, really want to know, like now, what his intention is. I mean, he's in charge. If this is what he's going to do, and that's what his intentions are, he needs to be forthcoming and say that. If that's not his intention, he needs to publicly come out and say that. What is it? I don't want to talk to whoever the director of this is. I don't want to talk. I want to know from the governor, what are your intentions with the port?
Yeah. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to highlight something that you had said, and I think it's very meaningful from the standpoint that you spent a lifetime at the port, over 27 years, and there's no one here that sits on council that probably has more institutional knowledge and experience with the port and its operation. And let's face it, Dole Banana, Chiquita Banana, they're not at the Port of Wilmington by chance. They're at the Port of Wilmington, okay, because of the fact that the port is a viable port, it is a hard-working port, and they could very well lose them. If you know, there's other ports, there's another port up in New Jersey that's being built right now. This deepening the channel and everything, they can go a little further north if things aren't well here. I think that port has done its job. The folks that work there has done its job through the years, and we need to keep it.
Well, we have competed with Philadelphia, Baltimore, and New Jersey forever.
Yeah.
That's our competitors. Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, I'll be brief. In fact, the Port of Wilmington is an incredibly great economic driver, and it's competitive because of its location. It's a gem. And I was also years ago very supportive of the idea that, you know, the state would undertake operational control of the port through a port authority. It provided capital for expansion, allowed for more job growth at the port. So now when we're talking a privatization concept, I really want to know, you know, that entity that comes in, they want to make a profit on the lease. How are they going to make the profit? What are they going to do? Are they going to reduce the labor force? Are they going to find other ways to cut costs that may impact, you know, the job situation then? It's a very concrete, real question. And, you know, frankly, I don't know why this is going on. I mean, the port's working very well. If they're just looking at the, you know, bottom line expense that the state has to incur every year, well, that's sort of kind of like cutting your nose off to spite your face, because if it's working well, we're getting some job growth, and we've got a good, you know, labor relations there. Why mess with that? So I'm extremely concerned, as well as the other folks that are here.
All right. We're good. Thank you very much. Okay, next on the agenda is council grants. First on the agenda, Blackbird Community Center, Councilman Powers.
And Councilman Bell. It's printed now, Mom. It's a grant for the community center, which does a lot in southern Newcastle County.
We need to clarify on each grant the dollar amount and who's contributing to it.
Yeah, it's written on mine.
$500 from me. Okay, there's a motion on the table for a $1,000 grant to the Blackbird Community Center. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it.
Not voting.
Not voting. Two. Standard all the way down. Taylor's Bridge Community Center, Councilman Powers.
It's another community center. I have $1,000 here just to make sure. Another community center in Southern Newcastle County that could use some help, and that's what I'm.
Okay, the motion on the table for $1,000 from Councilman Powers for Taylor Bridge Community Center. All those in favor?
Wait a minute. I have a question. Wait a minute. Amount requested $2,500, but you're putting up $1,000?
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, that's the maximum they can ask for. So.
Where they ask for it.
That's the maximum.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, all right. Fine.
He's only giving $1,000.
You're giving just a question. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Corporate Counsel
Betsy Gardner,
I just want to say that when requests come in with the amount from the group, say $2,500, if you don't specify how much. You're going to give them when you put a dollar in there. I'm going to put the 25.
That's not a problem. I'll make sure it's correct.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to make it different, you know, all you have to do is note it on there.
Right. Yeah. No problem.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor for $1,000 from Councilman Powers for the Taylor's Bridge Community Center.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All no? All not voting? Not voting?
No.
Not voting. President Kovac. Okay, next on the agenda, Middletown, Odessa, Townsend, Senior Center Incorporated, Councilman Bell and Councilman Powers.
Okay. As you'll note, both Bill and I partner together in the MOPT area, which I call it because it's Middletown, Odessa, Fort Penn, and Townsend. And sometimes we don't recognize some of the growth and some of the things that go on in historic Fort Penn. But MOPT, that might be a new thing. But this is for the senior center, and very active senior center, but one that's not without problems of donations. They work with the seniors in the area to maintain an active, healthy, and productive life, and offer nutritional programs, transportation, recreation, outreach support, and everything. So it's a very, very well-established, very well-run, but they're in need of some funding, and Bill and I are going to join together here with the consent of council.
Okay, let's clarify on the record that's $500 from Councilman Bell and $500 from Councilman Powers.
Yes.
Okay. So motion on the table for $1,000 grant, Middletown, Odessa, Townsend, Senior Center. So motion is second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All not voting? Not voting. Okay, next on the agenda, No Limit Athletics Incorporated, Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an organization that has come to me a few years ago before we reinstated the grants application, and I've been wanting to help them ever since a few years ago they first approached. Being aware of the types of things that they do, they have a primary focus on sports, and they didn't put in here how many kids that they actually service, but being familiar with their games, it's quite a few. And also, they have free tutorial services. A lot of parents are involved in this organization. It's pretty much a grassroots organization, but they are large. They do fundraising. They do charge a minimum fee of the kids to participate in these programs. They actually asked for, their request was for $2,475, not the $1,200. But the $1,200 is what represents what I'm willing to help them toward refurbishing 90 helmets. I believe it's 90 helmets, and it costs $200 or something a piece, I think, to rehab the helmets that they use. And I think every 2 years they're required for safety reasons, or at least designed for safety reasons, to refurbish the helmets. So I make a motion to grant them $1,200 toward that effort.
Which second.
About half of what they asked for.
Motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Not voting?
Not voting.
Councilman, I'll just say I did get a chuckle reviewing that No Limit Athletics, so they only asked for $24.75. I'm right. Like, is there No Limit? You should have went down to $25. Okay, Stanton Newport Little League, Councilman Retta.
Thank you. This Little League, they've been in operation for a number of years. They got a tremendous turnout of children and a good participation of parents. In fact, there's so many parents that go to the games and to the opening day, you actually have to have a policeman down there to keep from parking in people's driveways in the neighborhoods.
So I'm offering $1,000. Anybody wants to help chip in, it's fine. If not, I'm on loan.
Okay. Motion on the table for $1,000 grant. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All not voting?
Not voting.
Okay, next we have the new Knollwood Civic Association, Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, the new Knollwood Civic Association conducts its program out of a building and with the small grounds right in the Knollwood community. And they, for years, do a small summer camp, and this is a grant to provide help for the summer camp and summer fun club at the building there that they do every summer for the kids in the community. So they came forward with a request for $500, and I'd like to make a motion that we grant them $500 to help them with their summer camp program called Summer Fun Club for the new
$500 loans. $500 grant, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those not voting? Not voting. Okay. Next on the agenda, the Bear Babe Roof, Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Entertaining a $1,000 grant for the Bear Babe Roof League. As most of us know, we've worked hand in hand with Bear Babe Roof in obtaining some property long-term lease down off of Wrangell Hill Road and Route 1. They're in the process of trying to raise funds to not only further the betterment of their organization, but also construct their fields and get those in place. It's a community baseball softball league that serves ages 4 to 16. Their opening day is actually on April the 21st at 9 a.m. Down at the Redline Christian Academy. And I think that one of the things I'd like to highlight here, and it is important because we allow anyone to play regardless of race, gender, or limitations as long as the player lives within our designated league boundaries and meet the age requirements. And one of the important things here is they also have a part of their league is a special needs section for children who have special needs. So it's a tremendous league.
So we have a motion for a $1,000 grant.
Yes, sir, please. Okay.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Not voting? Not voting. Okay. Friends of Middletown Robotics, Councilman Powers.
Yes, this is kind of neat. It's when they make robots and play games with them. But anyway, it's really Appaquinamit, Middletown High School, and also St. George's is what the kids are drawing from. And they have funded themselves pretty much the whole year, but I guess they're going into the finals and they don't have any money for it. So I'm trying to give them $500 to help get the $2,500 they need.
And I will just make a comment, if I may, Councilman Powers, that the $500 that's being requested represents only 6% of the cost of the event that the students are raising the funds to fund.
So it's the kids have really done really well.
So there's a motion from Councilman Powers for $500.
Second.
All in favor, someone saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those not voting? Not voting. On the issue of grants, I would, as co-chair of finance, I would just like to take a moment to ask all of the council members to remind your staff to please try to monitor the grants that you put forward and that you you provide to these organizations, and ask them to kind of monitor, remind them that we need the 60-day report to come back as to what's been done with the funds so we can keep the records up to date and clear, and we can stay with the process that this council has adopted. So just a little reminder there. Is there anything for the expense and revenue roundtable? Anything under other? Anything from the public? Anything to get me out of this seat?
Motion
to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Chair wants to recognize the presence of Councilman Tackett. Well, we have a motion to adjourn. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it.
Adjourn it before you got it.
I'm not going to go in, and then you guys are still going on.